Welcome to BrainMachineNetwork.com.
How to produce live comedy with your friend Emily. How to produce live comedy with E-M-I-L-Y, Emily.
Welcome to How to Produce Live Comedy, a limited series podcast. I'm your host, Emily Winter. I'm a stand-up sketch and character comedian in Brooklyn. I've been a staff writer at TV Land and Fusion. For the last 5 years, I've produced a Time Out Critics Pick monthly variety show called Back Fat that's moving to Brooklyn's Union Hall this year. I also co-created the largest geographic comedy festival. It was called What a Joke, and it happened simultaneously in 32 cities to raise money for the ACLU. I also helped produce a Time Out Critics Pick Brooklyn weekly stand-up show called Side Ponytail. I'm doing this podcast because I thought it might be helpful to share what I've been learning about producing with the comedy community and anyone else interested in this topic. Today's podcast is about producing themed or gimmick shows, and my guest today was named one of Brooklyn Magazine's 50 Funniest People in Brooklyn. She also teaches a class on producing at the People's Improv Theater in Manhattan. It is Lauren Mall.
Hey!
Welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
You have one of my favorite, and I don't use the word gimmick in a derogatory way, but you have one of my favorite gimmick shows. Will you explain what that is?
Thanks. Thank you. We prefer in the gimmick community, we prefer specialty shows. No, I'm just kidding. It doesn't matter. But it's called Dudes Being Dudes Being Dudes. And it's been going like 4 years now. And I started it a couple years after I moved here. And I told my friends, I was like, I just want to do a show where it's no guys, but it's women and gay dudes dressed up as straight guys doing comedy on stage, like dressed as bros. And my friends were like, you should do that. You should definitely do that. So we started at the Creek in the Cave at a midnight time slot, which was a little rough, and I realized it was like, we gotta go. So then we were at Over the Eight for like 3 years, and then they closed down. And now we're doing like touring seasonal shows. So just like any different like new venues around Brooklyn or New York we've been trying. And you did the last one. You were at the Royal Halliards.
You were so awesome. Oh, thank you. I'm so happy you said specialty shows, because I keep calling them gimmick shows, and I'm like, I throw a lot of them, and I never knew the word for it, and I feel like...
Well, that's just a word I thought of right now. Like, it's not like a real thing. Yeah.
You don't know what the word...
There's just other ways... I'm trying to think what would be other ways to put it. Like themed show is a good way to say it, like you said earlier.
So, yeah, Dudes Being Dudes Being Dudes is so fun. It actually, like, inspired me to, like, start doing it the first time I did it, like, over a year ago, inspired me to start a Twitter account that got, like, written up in all these places. And so I loved doing it. I still love doing it. I love developing my feminist bro character. It's so fun. And, like, the people that go to the shows are, like, so enthusiastic about the topic.
Yeah.
How do you know what kind of specialty show is really going to, like, hit? Like, is really going to draw a crowd versus, like, what is just not going to resonate for people?
Yeah, that's a good question. I try with all my projects to hit four things. They have to unite, uplift, enlighten, and entertain. They don't do those things, then they have no business existing in the universe.
That is amazing. Do you have an example of one that you thought of that, like, didn't hit those four things, so you just scrapped it?
Yeah, I think just, like, through the years, I would try shows. Like, an early version of Bitchcraft was, like, Marilyn Summers' Sorcery Hour. But it was, like, me hosting as a character. And it wasn't as inclusive and fun as, like, Bitchcraft is now.
Can you explain your show, Bitchcraft?
Yeah, of course. Bitchcraft is a variety show. And I host it with the lovely Selena Kopic, who's, like, my blonde, wonderful, bubbly friend. And we open and close each song with, like, very fun pop songs that the audience can sing along. We do it at Sid Gold's Request Room with, like, this beautiful baby grand piano. We get storytellers and sometimes, like, a magician, a lot of musicians, stand-ups. And then we always have, like, surprises and, like, leotard karaoke, like, lots of weird things. But it used to be not as much fun when it was the Sorcery Hour, and now it's like, this is, like, a fun living room show that two girls are doing in their basement or, like, in their living room for, like, their parents' friends. Like, it's a very fun vibe.
So what was it about the Sorcery Hour that, like, wasn't quite as uplifting or, you know?
I think when I hosted it in the character... and it was just all me doing it myself. Uh-huh. There was just too many things to focus on. Like, okay. It was, like, me hosting as the character, booking people, doing everything myself. But then when I brought on Selena, I slowly transitioned out of hosting the show as Marilyn Summers, this, like, crazy old lady character, and, like, hosted it as myself. And then the show really became more, like, intimate, because Selena and I were just kind of, like, playing ourselves when we were, like, 13 and would, like, entertain people in our home, mm-hmm. you know? So it just has that feel of, like, let's have a slumber party and have pizza and drink soda and have fun, guys. Like,
do you feel like, because I've had trouble with this for my variety show, Back Fat, I now have a very strict rule that everything needs to be comedic variety. Do you ever mm-hmm. have trouble having acts that are not comedic and then, like, have an audience wonder where to laugh? Or, like, how do you deal with that?
That is such a good question. It's all about managing expectations. If you tell them at the beginning of the show, this is a variety show, you're going to be able to see a lot of types of entertainment tonight. Some of it's going to be storytelling. Some of it's just going to be music. And then then the audience knows what to expect. And then before you bring up a storyteller, explain, like, hey, this isn't stand-up. This is storytelling. They're going to be telling you one long story, and it may not be funny all the way through. And you don't have to say it, like, in so many words. But yeah. Just set up their expectations, and then also be very careful how you set up the running order of the show. Like, you don't want to put so many talking people in a row, like so many stand-ups and storytellers in a row. We try to do music almost like every other one.
Okay.
And so then that kind of sets up the idea of, like, oh, this is a rolling emotion show.
Yeah.
We're feeling different ways at different points, but we trust the host to take us where we need to go.
That's wonderful. That is excellent advice. And I wonder now if, like, because we had trouble. It was right when I started my variety show. I think it was the second show, and so I was 6 months into comedy, maybe 7 months into comedy, and had no idea what I was doing, and we had this burlesque dancer, and she was very funny, but she was also fat, and so I feel like people got very uncomfortable, and they were like, are we supposed to laugh? Are we laughing at her body? Are we laughing?
Yeah.
And as a host, I didn't know what to do to say, like, like, my take is that she wants you to laugh, guys. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, this is, because her routine was funny. It wasn't,
Yeah. No, I think it's not so much of that the tone was so different with that. I think it's honestly that it was a naked female body. Mm. And audiences honestly don't know what to do with that. Like, unless they're at a strip club or, like, at a specific burlesque show. So then they go in, like, expecting to be like, woo, woo, nudity is great, we're supporting this. But at a stand-up, like, variety show or just, like, any kind of variety show, they're like, wait a second, I don't understand what this is, because it's like, for some reason, because it's a puritanical society, America, it's the woman body just like freaks everybody out.
That's so interesting. I always assumed that it was like, oh, we don't want to laugh at, like, we don't want to make fun, are we allowed to laugh at a body that isn't a perfect body, but that, or quote unquote perfect body, mm-hmm. whatever, you know, not like a size zero or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, but I think maybe if it was even a size zero, also, that's not funny.
Yeah, they would have been very uncomfortable. Like, are we supposed to be turned on or what? Because, like, sex and comedy are very hard to mix.
Yeah.
Very hard to mix. And you have to do it, like, in a very... I don't even know how to do it, how to mix, like...
There are shows that are, like,
that
burlesque
do.
And... But I think that that's what burlesque and comedy,
they do
and
it well.
That that's what they...
Yeah, like, stand up and take your clothes off. They do a great job because they do stand-up and then burlesque. Stand-up, burlesque. And it's half and half, and it's only female comedians, so it's a very safe space kind of thing. You have to, like, set up this energy. But I feel like if it was a guy in your show doing that, doing a burlesque routine, whether he was, like, skinny or fat, they would have laughed.
Oh,
they're
not
afraid of a
male
body.
Yeah, we had stand-up comedians do burlesque on... I have an annual dating show that's part of Back Fat. So Back Fat does, like, 6 specialty shows a year, and then 6 showcases of variety. And for our dating show, we had a burlesque dancer that was... She didn't perform. She was, like... The four male comedians were trying to, like, win a date with her. And so they all had to do burlesque. And that was fantastic. Because I think it, like, you know, sort of flipped the normal script on its head. It wasn't her being sexual for them. Mm-hmm. It was them, you know, doing
it's
sexy dances.
It's safe to
and
laugh
costume.
At a male body, you know.
Yes, yeah, totally.
They're not scary. They're funny, you know?
They're not sexy.
Yeah.
They're funny. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I guess, how do you find your people when you are throwing a specialty show? How do you know how to promote it? I mean, I know how to promote showcase shows and variety shows, but, like, for something like Dudes Being Dudes, like, how do you find those people and what do you do? And do you promote it differently from a regular show? That's a lot of questions.
Yeah, no, so that's always the hardest thing is to get an audience. And I've had shows, especially with Dudes Being Dudes, I've had shows where we get listed in all these great places like The Skint and Brooklyn, and Time Out is always very nice to us. And sometimes we'll get written up so much, but then we'll have a very small audience. Other times we won't get any write-ups, and it'll be huge. Like, we have no idea. Like, I don't know what it is. We don't have a mailing list. And then sometimes it just, you can't depend on, like, press does not mean audience, which is like a hard thing to learn, but you still need to send press out. But yeah, I just have a few different press places that I email who like know of the show, mm-hmm. some people who've like been to the show, and I'll just like email them for press. I honestly need to do a better job about like sending it to more places. But I've kind of gotten lazy to be like, oh yeah, enough people come and enough people know about it that it's fine, you know?
Yeah.
I love big audiences, but I also love like the smallish to middling audience because I feel like it seems more of like a club.
Yeah.
Like you guys are, we're hanging out in a clubhouse and it's just us dudes, you know? Like, because the Halyard show, the room was like nice. It wasn't like super packed, but it was like a fullish room. And so it had a nice vibe of like, yeah, we're all just dudes in a clubhouse hanging out. And it felt very intimate, which is what I like.
It was great. It was full but intimate. And and you could talk to people individually, like, and you know, whatever.
Yeah.
That was wonderful.
Because we did one show, I forget what the venue was. I forget the name. Oh, the Footlight. And it was during, right after a snowstorm. And I was like, no one's going to come. And it was standing room only, like this big rock venue. And I was
amazing.
What's going on? It was like a really good feeling, but it was such a different, it was a great show, but it was more like a rock show, like very high energy and like not intimate at all.
Mm-hmm.
And which was fun, but I was like, I like both kinds.
Yeah.
So
you're not like, I need every show to have 100, to fill 100 mm-hmm. chairs.
Yeah.
My goal
for each show is like, as long as I look at the audience and they're making happy baby face, which is like wide eyes and like open mouth smile.
Like, oh my god!
Then like my show is a good show. I'm like, okay, I'm happy with that happy baby face.
But you were saying like press doesn't equal a packed show, and
mm-hmm.
that's totally true. I think sometimes it's the thing that unlocks the huge
mm-hmm.
audience, and some weeks it's just not. And
yeah.
so that's why I think it's super important to be like pushing, especially if you are trying to fill up a lot of seats or whatever, pushing all avenues, like
mm-hmm.
including mailing lists and including chalking and flyering and all of the things that you can do and social media.
And personal emails are the best. I get the most response from just individual emails saying, hey, someone's specific name, sharing a memory that we recently had. I have the show coming up, you know, like they feel so thought of and they usually show up, you know?
That's really important, connecting with people on a personal level to invite them to a place.
Plus, it's a free show, so I don't feel bad inviting them.
Right.
Or, like, Bitchcraft is $5, but it's like, hey, you know.
It's
like,
a great show for $5.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Because in the end, it's like, the show is, like, one night, and, like, do you want it to be a fun night? Like, invite the people you like, you know? And, like, if the audience wants it, they'll find it, you know? And, yeah, and always, like, love your audience. No matter if they're big or small, just, like, love them, give them so much attention and love, and, like, they will love your show.
That is such a running theme of all the guests that I've had on so far, I think. Everyone's been, like, you just have to be good to them. And so many people are not good to their audiences.
Yeah. I hate that. And that's why I started producing, because I was, like, these poor audiences. People are being so mean to them. And they're not giving them a good show. They're not, like, putting on a show.
I love that you saw other shows and you were like, for the people, I need to do better.
Or I would be on these shows, too, and also for the acts. I was like, why can't I have a show that's fun for the acts and the audience, you know?
Yeah.
So that's also another goal of my shows. Like, everyone has to have fun.
Oh, my God. I love Dudes Being Dudes so much. I love doing characters, and it was such a good homework assignment. It unlocked something in my brain. I love it so much.
Because there's so much freedom in writing from the voice of, like, a straight man.
Yeah.
Because it all goes back to, like, the audiences not knowing what to do with, like, the female form.
Yeah,
so
totally.
It's like, but when you're in this dude costume, like, they can't see your body. And you can say, like, whatever you want, and they'll laugh.
Yeah.
It's very freeing.
I love dressing up as a man.
Yeah.
So when you're teaching your producing class, how does it work with, like, people's ideas? How do they pitch you ideas? And then what do you say, no, that's a bad idea, or yes, or how does it, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So the first class is all about brainstorming, and I have, like, all these certain special, like, activities, because I used to, like, teach preschool, and so I kind of use that mentality to, like, teach adults. Like, I'll bring, like, candy to class. class and like play nice music for them and set the room to be like I'm doing a show. Like I'm setting this vibe for them to feel like it's a safe space and for them to come up with like a really good idea that they're proud of. And so we do all these brainstorming things and then they share it aloud with the group. And so it's not just, the onus is not just on me. It's also mm-hmm. like they get a free focus group with the class.
Okay.
And so it's a group of like 10 people last time giving everyone advice. And like, I told them specifically like, hey, part of getting advice is knowing which advice to take. If the advice resonates with you, take it. If it doesn't, like leave it. You
right,
know, you
right.
don't have to please everybody. Like, take advice you want. But yeah, so through that we would shape ideas and then throughout the like the whole session, the 4 weeks, they would just come to me with like challenges during the class about like, oh, I'm trying to do this show, but it's hard to find a venue. What are some tips? So I have this whole like section about venues and stuff like that.
Do you have any venue tips you'd be willing to share?
Oh yeah. So like I talk about all the different kinds of venues you can do. You could do like a traditional theater venue. You could do a music venue. You could do bar shows. And then like specialty venues, like I do one at a nursing home, you know, kind of like random ones. And I have pros and cons for each. And so then we go through like, well, with a bar show, you don't have to pay to rent the space, but also it's unreliable and sometimes your mics won't work and it'll be loud in the background.
When do you think it's okay? And I know this isn't exactly on the topic of specialty shows, but when do you think it's okay to pay to rent the space? Because I'm leaving a venue now that charges most people to rent the space, but I started there so long ago that I don't have to pay, but I just don't think it's appropriate when bringing in all this business. I don't know. Yeah. What's your feeling on that?
In most cases, I try my best just not to pay anything.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't like to pay to do theater, and I don't like people to pay to see theater. It's like, it should be this... Yes, we should be able to make a living at it somehow, which is kind of impossible. But it's also, it just should be free and it should be accessible. Like, it should be accessible to make and consume.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll only pay for a venue if it's, like, a very, very special venue and it's, like, a one-night-only show. Like, for the Amazon musical, like, premiere, all these videos, I didn't want it to go crazy. Like, I wanted all the videos to play well. So it's like, hey, what's a place that does screenings like this all the time? Hey, Videology. I've always wanted to do a show there.
Mm-hmm.
So like, yeah, I'll pay to rent that because it's like just a one-off.
And they're also providing a service in
yeah.
a way. They're making sure that your videos play properly.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to play them for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think like in that case, you're like, yeah, you're really getting a specific service out of them. And
yeah.
That,
it
aside
was perfect.
From just the space.
Mm-hmm, exactly. I feel like for ongoing shows, don't go somewhere that pays. Set up a relationship with this venue, and then the business you bring in is basically your payment to them. Like, Sid Gold's Request Room is so nice to us. Like, we don't pay anything to do it there. They're the ones that even suggested, they're like, why don't you take $10 at the door so you can pay your performers? We're like, that's a great idea. So now we do that. The money
that's
goes to the
wonderful.
Performers. And then, like, Sid's like, we just, like, drink there all night, and we, like, pay them for, like, the food and the drinks, and so, you know,
yeah.
it's great, and their food and drinks are delicious, so we're like, it's just a fun party night
right,
for us,
right.
you
That's
know?
Wonderful. And I think it was really interesting when you said, oh, you have, like, a focus group, basically, people bounce their specialty gimmick ideas off of each other, and
yeah.
I think that is a really important part of finding out if yours resonates, is to just ask a bunch of people and not select those people that are going to give you the answer that you want, necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'll always chime in and, like, just kind of, I won't give them criticisms, but I will, like, ask them questions about their idea, kind of, like, having them see the holes in their own idea. Like, well, why would we need that show when we already have a show so similar like this show, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'll just ask them questions, and then they realize, like, oh, it isn't a good idea.
Yeah.
But you can never tell somebody straight out, like, your idea sucks. Like,
well,
I would never do that.
I did
yeah.
gather a bunch of ideas from comedians that wanted
yes.
your input, so you are allowed to say they suck, although I think they're very cool.
I like the term of they don't have legs. I
don't,
prefer
no,
that.
Yeah, because
yeah.
I think, like,
they're
if
not
you're
gonna
enthusiastic
go
about something, then there's merit to it, and maybe it's
yeah.
not a live comedy show.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a podcast. Maybe it's a Twitter account.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a submission to McSweeney's.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, so
like a OneNote Tumblr, you know?
Yeah, exactly. There's like
things.
So many, and that's like the hard part. Sometimes I have an idea and I'm like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is this its own Twitter? Is
yeah.
this an essay? Is this
mm-hmm.
a book? Is this a podcast?
Yeah.
And
is it
so
all
difficult.
Of the above?
Is it
How do
nothing?
I know?
Nothing
yeah.
I've ever done has been all of the But I wonder, oh, I guess maybe before I ask about some of these ideas, I want to go over, I would love to talk about some of my favorite themed specialty gimmick shows that I've ever seen, and have you add some of yours. I guess I'll start. I have one that I don't think happens anymore, and I don't even know the guy who runs it very well. It's Colin Burgess. He used to run this show called Parental Approval, and it was one of my favorites. I went to watch a couple times where people would have their parents come on stage. So if Lauren, if it was you, you'd have your parents come on stage, and then you would select five comedians. You don't really perform. You might do like a warm-up set, but you select five comedians that you think your parents might like or hate, and then they watch. They sit up on stage and watch all the comedians do a set, and then they pick their favorites, and their favorites get a prize that your parents bring. And I just thought that that was such a fun show. I don't know, like the That's stakes were high below at the same time, and I think like having high stakes is a thing that really makes a specialty show have legs. I'm learning your lingo.
Yeah.
For my dating show, I try to get sponsors so that there's like a date at stake. So like comedians are broke. It's like known. So if four comedians are vying for a date with a lovely burlesque dancer, I want them to know that it's $100 date to these places that they would actually want to go. Much better date than they could ever, you know, pay for on their own.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's like a cool... That was one cool show, and that's, like, one cool lesson that I've sort of learned about stakes, I think, that are, important. What's one that you love?
I love, there's this storyteller, Robin Beatty, and she's just this, like, kick-ass witchy woman who it's like, I want to grow up to be you. You are so cool. She has cats. Lives in this cool house with her husband, and she does.
Sounds like you.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like she's me in like some other dimension. But so she and her husband, she has a storytelling concert in her living room, and like her two cats are like walking around, taking naps, and she has the storytellers do 30-minute sets.
Oh my
God. That's like it's not like a gimmick or such, but it is nice that the audience knows that they're getting into, like, we're in a living room, this is very intimate, storytellers are going to be regaling us for 30 minutes each, so you really get to know the storytellers, and there's no microphone, it's very, like, a salon kind of feeling.
Oh, I love it.
Wonderful.
It's like from another era. It's beautiful.
So
I love house shows if you can swing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm, like, too persnickety about my carpet to ever do it in here, also it's not the biggest living room, but, like, my boyfriend Chris and I both have done a show that some really young comedians run out of their apartment, and it's called Puke Fest, and they're like just out of college, and they're so funny and sweet, but they run the show where like people, if you say a certain word in your set, for mine, if it was like when I talk about fast pitch softball or something, which I talk about a lot, kids have to drink these shots that are on the table, and I say kids, I was like the oldest by 10 years in the room, and it was so fun, and I think if you... It's a fun theme because it's drinking. They know their audience. It's all kids in their early 20s. They have the space. It's, like, warm, packed, fun. And, like, I don't know. That's, like, a real, like, that's not a heavy theme, but it's, like...
It's just a good vibe show.
Yeah, it's just, like, I think, like, it's enough of a theme that it, like, gives you an activity to do as an audience. But also, like, yeah, if you can do it in a house. I don't know. I just think it's super cool. What do you think about shows? I have mixed feelings. Mostly, I think, positive, though. About shows that are, email me for the, email me, what am I, 1,000? Message me for the location, or like, you have to email, some of them are email, you have to email a certain email address to get the secret location that changes. I don't know, from a producer's standpoint, what do you think about that?
I would be afraid to do that, because I'd be like, nobody's gonna come.
Yeah. It's cool, but I'm scared.
Yeah, and like my whole thing is like accessibility. Like, is it easy for people to get to and consume? Like,
yeah,
just want it to be free and easy.
I have the same reservations about that. So you would probably advise somebody to not start out that way.
Yeah.
Maybe unless, if they have a giant mailing list.
You know what?
Or something.
Yeah. If they get to the point where their show is so packed that they can't cater, that it's like overwhelming for them, then that's the time to do it.
That is a really good point. Are there any other shows that have existed that are themed shows that you love?
It's not a comedy show, but it's such a fun show. It's like a game show cabaret show. And it's called Cabaret Showdown. I'm doing it like... 4 or 5 years now at under St. Mark's, and then now it's at the Crane. And what it is like people sign up, like 8 people sign up to be contestants ahead of time, and they get to choose, or they don't choose, they choose randomly songs off the wall. There's always like a theme, like British Invasion or like 50s girl groups or whatever. And then they choose off the wall this song, and they have 30 seconds to practice it with like the pianist and then just perform it for the audience.
Oh my God.
And a lot of songs people don't know. And so the whole like gig is like to just improvise it, you know, just like kind of turn it into your own thing. And so that is such a fun show to watch because like some people like die up there, but it's excruciating, but also kind of fun to watch. But then other people like throw the music to the ground and just like put on a whole show without ever knowing the song. So it's very fun. And the audience gets really into it. And sometimes the audience can like get up and do it themselves. If like somebody bombs their round, they can like take someone's spot. They can like have their friend go up for them.
Do you feel like having audience involvement is a key to a good specialty show or not necessarily?
Yeah, it shouldn't be too much audience involvement because some people really hate audience involvement. Like if you tell people ahead of time, hey guys, there's gonna be a lot of audience participation, people will leave. My mom especially like hates audience participation, like ugh. So I feel like just keep it secret, like have it be very participatory, but don't like sell it as such.
That's really good.
Be kind of sneaky about it and think of it more about just like them, if they want to join in, they have the ability to if they want to, but they're not under pressure to participate.
Okay.
Because people don't like that pressure. They're like, I'm here to be entertained. I don't want there to be pressure on me.
Yeah, that's true. But then some people, I was just doing a show 2 nights ago where a guy from the audience, he was begging the host to get up and do stand-up comedy for the first time after the show. And he was like 65, and the host was awesome and let him do it, like after the whole show. But then he had to come up on stage and take him off because he started going for like past 8 minutes. And we were all like, we gotta go home.
Yeah,
we're being good sports here.
Yeah. But, this is too much.
So I have a bunch of ideas that people sent to me, and I wonder if I can pitch you some of them, and then we'll see if they have legs.
Yes.
Okay.
And in my class, I give people stickers for when they do really well.
Oh my God, I love it.
And everybody gets stickers.
That sounds, I would go just for the stickers. Okay. So this one comes from Matt Anderson, who's a great comedian in New York. He said, okay, so my idea for a show was called Comedy Shorts. And it's a showcase comedy with 4 to 5 comics, and everyone has to wear shorts on stage, shattering the illustration. I think that is illusion that got, yeah. Shattering the illusion that people can't be funny on stage in shorts. It also features 1 or 2 short sketches, LOL pun.
I feel like that would be good for a one-off, but it doesn't... I don't know, unless like you're in Florida,
or you're
doing the show in the Rockaways at like a beach bar,
yeah,
you know, like, yeah. But also it's like, well, what's the point of it, you know, like, because this is
so.
If this was 2003, sure, do it, but it's like we're living in some troubled times, so
right,
I feel like these shows,
yeah,
I feel like shows need to really like have a point, and like, yeah, some silly shows are fun, but it's like. Let's have it have a little bit more of a point to it.
A little bit more.
But for a one-off, if your uncle has a bar in the Rockaways and he's like, hey, come do a comedy show here, that is the show you do at
that
bar.
Yeah, that's a perfect, yeah. I think there's so many great ideas. Like, this makes, the idea of it makes me laugh as a comedian because we talk occasionally about people wearing shorts on stage and, oh my God, that guy wore cargo shorts on stage. He clearly doesn't take his craft seriously.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's a thing for the masses.
Yeah. Oh, unless you also have all the comics are also unreasonably short and they have like issues with that in their lives. And then it's like kind of bordering on not disability territory, but like differences, celebrating differences. So then that would be, then I would want to see that show once a month, you know, like the best short comics. They'll have to be like under 5'3" or something.
So it's just everything with shorts. Like that's just like throwing everything short at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Yeah.
Like maybe short sets from short comedians wearing shorts and a few short sketches.
Yeah.
Sketches. What are your four things again? Your four.
Unite, uplift, enlighten, and entertain. So you got to teach them a little something, have them get together.
Yeah.
And also, like, leave them feeling really good.
Yeah.
And, like, laughing, you know?
Yeah. So, cool. So I think we could go even harder on the shorts. to make it
be more inclusive. So if you're working with people that are like, I don't like being short, it's like hard for me in my life, and then they can get on stage and talk about it. It's like, yes, let's be inclusive to the short comedian.
Yeah, yeah. It's a might be a little hard to sell. Although if you went whole hog, is that the whole hog?
Yeah.
If you went whole hog on promoting it as a short show, maybe the media might think that that's funny.
Yeah.
And like want to promote it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More of an angle and a little bit more heart,
this
too.
This one comes from Kathy Humes. She has an idea that is cool. It's for a twin show where it's back-to-back sets by people who look alike.
I like that. But I feel like it would be a challenge to do it for more than one show. It would be fun to do it as like a one-off like fundraiser for something.
Oh, fundraiser. I love it.
Yeah, so like what would be...
Something where there's, I don't know, does Doublemint Gum need a fundraiser?
There's not so many conjoined twins these
days. I was
going
to say, like twins a fundraiser with disability for, show. I don't know.
But do it as a fundraiser, and then it's like a cute thing. It's like, oh yeah, doppelganger show. Like, you know what would be even better that you could do for a long time? People that look like dogs.
People?
And either have a photo, like, or I think that like you should have the dog there, because there are a lot of venues that like allow dogs.
Yeah.
And that'd be fun, and then you could do it as a fundraiser for an animal rescue group. You know, like this comedian, and then it's followed up by
How
the
do you
dog
look
getting
that?
On stage.
Lauren, I'd like you to be on the show, because you look like my pit bull.
You look like this dog. And then if they didn't really look like the dog could just wear a wig that kind of looked like
Oh my
them.
God,
you know,
that's
like,
so funny.
Be
that's
very
working
cute.
On John Rosenberger, our producer here. So I think so, maybe for a twin show, it's cool, and maybe a one-off. And
yeah, and the twins, like maybe do all kinds of twins. Like it could be another comedian they look like, another like an animal they look like a cat or a dog, you know, like
cool.
Keep it general.
Yeah. Here's one that I love. And maybe I'm a piece of shit because I love it. It's Billy Procida's idea, and it is much like his podcast. It is an interruption show, but the god mic is held by an ex of the comic.
I just feel like that could go negative very quickly.
Yeah, that's why I think I'm a piece of
shit. Powerful of emotions involved. It
okay.
would make the audience feel very uncomfortable. Because you know when you're on like a double date with somebody and then the other couple's like fighting?
Yes.
And you can tell like it would be like that the whole night. Like why would you want to subject an audience to that? Like what you should do, have it be an actor playing their ex.
Okay.
And then that way you can pre-write stuff, and then it's all safe, and it's all funny, and it's all in fun and games. There's no, like, crazy emotions involved, and they're not, like, actually out to, like, hurt each other, you know?
Yeah.
So the audience isn't going to know, but they're going to have more fun with it, because it's not going to be negative and...
Yeah, I think that I was feeling guilty for loving this idea so much because I think it could go so negative. But if you can get an actor to actually do a good job, a convincing job, I mean, to me, the funniest part is like when somebody's like, oh, I don't know, like I have a new joke where I'm like, oh, I like nerdy guys. If my boyfriend were on stage being like, oh, well, you could have told me that I fell into this, you know,
yeah.
I don't know, like... I don't know.
Unless it was, and even if there, yeah, there would have to be a way that it wasn't, couldn't go negative. So you'd either have to, like, have it be people who didn't hate each other, or people that are, like, actors, you know, playing the role of someone who hated someone, so.
That is good advice. I want to see scratching and fist fights, and maybe that's why I think Billy should do it as is.
Yeah, no, I mean, you can still have scratching and fist fights
right, just
with
like
the actors,
pre-planned.
Jerry Springer style, you know.
So here's an idea that I have been a little hesitant about. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good idea, and but I'll talk about my hesitancies after I pitch it to you. My co-host of my variety show, Back Fat, wants to do this, and he is full of great ideas. This one, I don't know. It's called Double Feature, and we pick two movies that are really popular. For example, maybe like Clueless and Pretty in Pink or something. Mm-hmm. And you have six comics. One does first act of Clueless. Second one does second act of Clueless. Third one does third act of Clueless. And then you do intermission, then you do the second movie. So for me, this is fun and different, but I worry that I love Clueless, and that's why I'm using it as an example, but I don't know if I would go see a Clueless show. So I am very, like, concerned about, like, you're like, okay, like, a more intimate show is fine with me. I really, like, I like to pack out rooms, and so I'm not sure that this has enough legs for to pack out a room.
Yeah, it doesn't. Like, people want to watch... Oh, honey. She doesn't like it either. Sorry, buddy. But I think people want to watch Netflix, like, movies on Netflix at home on their couch. And when they go out to see comedy, they want to see personal, real comedy. They want to have an experience. You know, like, this just seems like too much work for the acts, first of all. Because it's like, wait... What is the middle part of Clueless, specifically, you know?
Right.
And, like, do I have to just watch Clueless again, like, before I do this show? Or, like, what, can I read the synopsis again? Like, I like that movie. But to do a show and then, like, what is the set about? Like, are you doing just a set on it? Like, it just is too much.
I think you do song or sketch or PowerPoint or however you want to. But, yeah.
But then I feel like it's too much work for the audience then, too, to be like, what? I mean, instead of dividing it up, what you could do is, like, comedians wax poetic on this movie, and it doesn't have to be a double feature because that's just too much. Like, whoa, you don't need to do two movies, but like have one movie and then have people do a whole evening of things just like loosely inspired by that movie.
Yeah.
So it's like less homework for the acts and less homework for the audience, you know?
I love that, and I think that it makes me feel better because my co-host Larry is full of so many good ideas, and this one, it just keeps not feeling like the right time to do it, and I think that these are the reasons that I haven't been able to articulate. Next question.
And then
question.
You can have, like, play music, play the theme music from the movie in the background before the show.
I don't care about movies.
You know, yeah.
I'm, like, not a movie nerd at all. Like, I never see movies. I don't care. I have trouble sitting. I watched a movie last night because I'm getting sick, so I was able to sit still for 1 second. But, like, I just don't even like movies, so I'm like, oh. But I don't want to, like, be a rain cloud. This one's from Paul Goble in Phoenix. It says, I tried to launch a show called Celebrity Rebuttal along with stand-up. A comic would share a story about meeting a celebrity. Then another comic would come out as the celebrity and share their side of the story. What do we think of this? Does this have legs?
I think the thing that's confusing for the audience then is, well, what's real?
Yeah.
Because they know for sure the celebrity is not real. So then they're like, well, is that story even real? What would be more interesting is if these people the comedians who've had encounters with celebrities, if they try their best to, like, reach out to these celebrities to confirm the story, like, via Twitter or, like, Instagram, and then share those screenshots with the audience of, like, and here's what happened when I tried to validate my story with them. Because, like, usually that's they're just going to get ignored, but then the jokes are, like, in their emails to these people.
Yeah.
So, like, it would be awesome if they responded. They're probably not going to, but then it can just be funny because it's all these screenshots of, like, unanswered tweets. Like, remember when I saw you on the street corner? And
I really love that. Yeah, like, you can use the fact that it didn't work out for comedic purposes, and that's something that's, like, really a good opportunity to hear.
Yeah, because I just feel like if you have somebody pretending to be the celebrity, it's like, no... It's going to be confusing. Bummer. What's real, what's not. So, have it be super real. Where, like, they take it very seriously. Like, this celebrity encounter changed my life. I tried to reach out to them to, like, I need to verify it before I get in front of an audience, you know?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I kind of, I don't know, maybe I'm just not silly enough, but I don't love it when people are like, and now Tom Hanks, and it's just some 23-year-old in a wig.
Yeah.
I just, like,
because nobody,
like,
does impressions well. It's very hard to find a good impressionist.
I mean, I get it if you're doing, like, okay, I need to do political material, and I'm doing Trump or whatever, but, like, I don't know. It's just, like, it's not that fun if somebody's like, okay.
If you're not, like, eerily good at it, just
don't do it.
Don't do it. It takes the audience out of it. Just have it be super real. Like, you can just have the show, if you want to be simple, just have it be just celebrity story encounters, you know?
Yeah. I really like that. I think that's, a better way to go. Let's do one more before we wrap up. Okay, this one is from Leif, who runs Brain Machine, which is the network that this podcast is on.
I love that name.
Yeah, it's really good. Brain Machine.
Oh, I was talking about Leif.
Oh.
No, but also Brain Machine is great, too.
Yes. Okay.
Leif,
well,
it sounds like a god of wintertime or something.
Leif, I was just going to plug the network, but now I won't because she wasn't talking about the name of your network. She was talking about your name.
Sorry, man. Okay.
This is Leif's idea. I have a gimmick idea for a show. A weekly live Starfinder, Dungeons and Dragons in Space, he put in parentheses. It would be a serialized improv space opera. Don't worry about the podcast, though. I just love some direction on how to get people there. Okay, so he wants to do a a serialized, improvised space opera that is also being recorded for a podcast. Okay.
The problem with serialized things is that not everyone can make it once a week. And so if you can only make it to week 2 and 3, then you're like, crap, how did it begin and how did it end? What I would do is have it be like one very long night. And if people want to stay for the whole thing, they can. If they don't want to, they don't have to. But you can almost do it just like as a marathon show. Yeah. Or have the episodes be 30 minutes and then it's not that long. If you do like a four or five, like that's not too, too long. Like some people will go see 3 hour long shows or 2.5 hour long shows.
Who are these people? I am not that person. My heart, I leave after 90 minutes.
I know. If you tell them it's going to be that long.
Yeah.
And you say like you can leave or whatever, you know,
if you are going to do a marathon show, you really have to be clear about your expectations. Mm-hmm. For the audience, for sure. Yeah. Right?
Be like, you can get up and leave, but we are recording this, like, all these parts in a row. Yeah. And if you get sucked into this story, like, please stay, you know?
Or do it where each one is individual, serialized, like a sitcom, where it's like, sure, like, it helps to know the other things, but really they sort of stand on their own.
That would be easier because then it's like people still feel in on the joke. Or you can do very funny, dramatic, like, previously on... You know, and next time on.
Yeah, that's great. I think getting people there is tough for something that is so niche.
Yeah, and especially for improv, too.
Yes, yes.
So you would have to do it through an improv theater where people are already going to expect improv.
That's smart.
And then students of that theater would want to go see that show. Because the majority of people seeing improv shows are improv students.
Yes. That is a good point.
So cater to them. But I do like the idea of recording a live show for a podcast. That's a great way to.
And that's Leif's specialty. Cool. Yeah, I think Leif, for this one, it might be good to, if you can find online groups of people who have this, like, enthusiasm for something, then I think that can help you promote it. It's hard. I mean, for example, I threw a show for Wisconsin alumni, and I reached out to the alumni organization, and they promoted the show for me, and we filled the room up with alumni. So if you can find groups online and really tell them ahead of time what's going on so that they can promote it for you, just make sure, like, they'll do it, you know, because if the Wisconsin Alumni Association hadn't promoted that show, I would have been fucked. I wouldn't have had a way of making it happen. But if you can find an organization that already has your target audience and talk to them, that might be a really good way of finding those people. I'm not really sure. I'm not, like, in the D&D world, but there has to be, like, D&D New York meetup groups and stuff like that.
Yeah, and also, like, blogs, like, sci-fi blogs or whatever. Mm. And, like, maybe it's sometimes good to partner with a website to have them premiere your thing.
Yes. Oh, so, that's a really good idea. Yeah.
So say, like, offer them, like, perhaps, you know, we'd be open to premiering it through your website, because then they get content for free, and you get traffic, you know?
That is so smart. Yeah, so, like, ways that you guys could partner in person or even offline is great. Do you have any other tips for producing specialty shows that we haven't talked about yet?
No, I mean, but as long as you are excited about your show, as long as you are super jazzed about it and never tire of thinking of it, then you should do it. If you feel like, yeah, you know, I'm a little tired of this, then take a break from it and then quit it if you don't like it. You know, like, life is too short to run a show that you don't like.
Do you think that there's a good, like, do you think specialty shows should be run quarterly, monthly, weekly, annually?
Personally, I used to do that. Weekly is way too much. Weekly is, like, way too much work unless you have a whole team of producers and are just doing it for, like, just 6 weeks and then you're off. And then, like, a year later, another 6 weeks in a row. Ongoing weeklies can be, like, very intense if it's just, like, if you have to prepare stuff. Because usually with these specialty shows, the actors have to prepare things, you know, for the dude show, you have to prepare sets. And it's hard to find people that are going to want to write something new every week for this without getting paid. So monthly is great if you have more than one producer, because monthly can be a lot of work too. My favorite now, because I have multiple shows, I do a monthly one at a senior center too, or like a nursing home. So now my other two shows are seasonal. So it's just 4 times a year. I can get my favorite acts. I can get really good press. And then the audiences are bigger too, because they're like, oh, I missed that show.
Yeah.
But monthly, they're like, no, I'll see it next month.
Yeah.
Seasonally, they're like, oh shit, I gotta get to Bitchcraft in January. January 10th.
Yes, yes. So that's actually a great... what is coming up for you? Although I think this might come out after January 10th, but what is coming up for you? And would you like to plug shows, websites, and Twitter, everything, where to find you?
Yes, I'm so bad at Twitter, but what I love, what I'm doing right now is Apologies from Men, the album.
Oh my God, it's amazing. You're doing an album?
It's a whole album.
Your video is the best thing ever. It was just the whimsy that we needed during a dark time.
Oh, thank you.
And what Lauren is doing is taking apologies from sexual harassers and setting them to music and making music videos for them out of paper dolls, right?
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Plug it.
No, it's very fun because it's just like I've been very down and out for a while thinking, like, I don't have a project that I'm, like, very excited about right now besides, like, my old ones. Like, I want something new. What am I going to do? And then I went to go see a concert with my husband, and I saw this, like, band playing on stage, and I was like, fuck, I want to do a big concert. Like, I just love making music, and I love composing. And then I remembered, like, the Louis C.K. apology had, like, come out that day, and I was like, you know what? I want to set that to music because it was so full of shit, but there was so much stuff in there, you know? Like, I want to set that to be like a big kind of like meatloaf piano ballad. And then the videos came later. Somebody was like, are you going to make a video for it? I was like, oh shit, I should probably do that. And now the whole thing's just going to be a visual album because it's too hard. I realized it's too hard to listen to these songs without having puppets and glitter, like paper puppets and glitter, like dancing in front of your eyes. They really help like ease it. But my favorite thing about it is that the women from the Louis C.K. whole mess, like just like bad situation, his harassment, the ladies that he harassed, they shared the video
on
Twitter and stuff and Facebook. So I just thought that was really nice. It was like when the victims are supportive of it, it's like, okay, I did it right. Because I'd never want the victim to be the butt of the joke, you know?
Absolutely. And that's not how it felt, even though it's whimsical.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's wonderful to hear. Yeah. Okay, well, where can people find you online and all over the world?
Yeah, laurenmaul.com, M-A-U-L, like what a bear does to you, not where a bear shops. And then apologiesfrommen.com as well is where you can find the new videos, and the album will be out sometime, hopefully March or April.
And you have Bitchcraft happening January 10th, but also if this comes out after, what is your next big live show that you're looking forward to?
Ooh, the concert for Apologies for Men. I just have no time. I have to compose all the songs, and I have to make all the videos.
Oh my God.
And I have to record all the songs, so it takes a long time. I have two and a half kind of done, and I'm going to do 9. So hopefully I can get it all done by March. Anybody has Adderall to sell me, I'll be accepting it. I have a lot of shit to get done. But yeah, so I'm not doing any other shows after Bitchcraft. Like, I just gotta put the pedal to the metal because it takes a long time. And then I have to account for, like, writer's block. Sometimes the song just won't come to you. And it's like, I don't want to force it and have, like, a shitty song on the album.
Right.
And then making the videos takes so long because it's cut paper, stop motion animation.
Oh, my God.
And so it's, like, very tedious, like, move the thing here, move it a little bit more.
Yeah. So when is your next class at the Pit?
Oh, it's the end of January. I'll be doing another round of producing. And last time, the projects that came out of it, we had people create web series and live shows from that class, and they are amazing. So they did great. So
if you are in New York and you would like Lauren to teach you about producing web series or live shows, sign up for her class at the Pit. How do they do that?
You can go to, I think it's thepit.com, or also just go to my website, laurenmaul.com. I have it right on the front page, and it's the direct link just to sign up for the class.
Awesome.
And I also bring stickers and candy, so that another reason to go to the class.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us,
Thank you, Emily, and thank you, Bingo.
Oh, Bingo. Boy, oh boy. You are just chewing on. She doesn't chew all day long, and then, you know, of course. Yeah, okay.
She's all happy. Right. She's a good girl.
All right. Bye, guys. Bye. Thanks for listening to How to Produce Live Comedy. If you like the show, please rate and review it on iTunes. And you can donate to me and my producer on Venmo at Emily-Winter. To find me online, visit my website, emilywintercomedy.com, or follow me on Instagram and Twitter at EmilyMcWinter. It's Emily MC Winter. You can find photos from shows I produce on our network website, brainmachinenetwork.com. Thanks so much.
Welcome to BrainMachineNetwork.com.